off last week. So we were talking about the Ramah added on that a couple are not permitted to sit in what's called a Safsalam Snadnade. We have a bench that moves together when they're when each one moves around, so that's considered to be a problem. It wasn't clear exactly where this came from. The Sfaradim didn't really follow this Chumra, but the Ramah said it. And then the Ramah goes further, and then he starts to talk about a couple traveling together at a time when she's in Nida, there are Chok, there are Chalas Rosh, things of that nature, going to the gardens, going to the orchards. So the Ramah spoke about that as well. So Menachem Rambam understood that the Ramah was talking about two different things. First, he was talking about Saf Slam Snadeh, which has nothing to do with a fun experience, just on the very fact that they're sitting on the same bench that's moving from each other's weight, that in and of itself is a problem, either because that's considered to be like they're touching, since they're supporting each other, or maybe it's a tantamount to like sitting on each other's bed, whatever the case may be. And then there's a second prohibition of some traveling together. If they're traveling for vacation kind of purposes, that would be a problem. I'm also, they're going on business together, that's for sure, okay, so we mentioned the end of the show last week. And folks can say today that not all vacations are us. These vacations that are more husband-wife, romantic kinds of vacations, those are a problem. Couples going to Disneyland, whatever, other things, they go to the museum together or something, so that wouldn't be, those wouldn't pose a problem. So that idea that a couple has to curtail a little bit some of the activities in terms of vacationing and those types of vacations, so that's part of a general prohibition of the Devarim of Schok, the Kalas Rosh, that the Shulchan Aruch quotes, and one has to be careful even the way one speaks to one another at the time when she's in Nida. That category called the Chiba, the Devarim Schok, the Kalas Rosh, is very, very hard to pin down exactly what constitutes the Devarim Chiba. Not a lot of it's going to depend on the time and the place and the culture and what this particular couple views to be Devarim Chiba. But if it's considered to be in the category of Devarim Chiba, then it's something that should be avoided when the woman is in Nida. It's always a famous question the couples always ask, always like the first week you have to get married. They let us say, I love you. The woman doesn't need that. So they have a Kabbalah that it depends what I love you means. A brisket term, there are different kinds of I love you. Sometimes I love you has a connotation to the chiba, sometimes it doesn't. If it's said a candlelight dinner, then it's that's considered to be a problem. If it's said that you're on the train and you're trying to explain why you're late and you're throwing I love you at the end just to calm everybody down, so that's probably a little bit less of a Devarim Chiba. So again, it's very, very hard to, the same way we mentioned last week, it's hard to properly define what's considered to be L'tai Lima. So these kinds of Echokas are a little bit vaguer as well. There is another Echoka that, according to many, as it's, the Gemara does discuss it. The question is what the conclusion of the Gemara is. The Gemara discusses about looking at a woman, looking at one's wife when she is in Nida. So the Gemara says, if you take a look at the fifth of the Maamar Kamos, it's based on the Gemara Maseches Nedarim, but the Gemara speaks in general, Achav Rabbi Yosha, Makal Tzofa Benashim, Tzofa Mola De'Aveira. The person is always looking at women, so that's going to lead him to down the wrong path. Chomis Nachav, Akeva Shalish, Abim Abadim She'en Mugonim. If a person looks, I mean, at the bottom of the leg of a woman, so that's going to lead to bad things. Amar Rabbi Yosef Ishto Nida. But the Gemara is talking about even his own wife when she is in Nida. So what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara uses again a very, very vague term of Mokam Akeva. So what in the world is Mokam Akeva? Mokam literally means the bottom of a heel. So Amar Rabbi Shimon Lachish Akeva, the title of Mokam Atinofes, Shemachuvi Kinegar Akev. The Mokam Akeva is a Melitza. It doesn't mean literally to look at her heel. It means to look at the Osa Mokam, look at a place that he shouldn't be looking at when she is in Nida, literally also Mokam Erva, just to look at her legs, that would be permissible. So that's a big question, the Rishonim, what exactly, this all boils down to the mice in terms of what one is permitted to look at, what's not permitted to look at when the woman is in Nida. So the Rambam in the sixth of the Maamar Kamos is very, very amakal of this. The Rambam Ruchas Yisur B writes, Umutul Yadam, it's on page 16, it's on page 16 and 6 of the Maamar Kamos, Umutul Yadam, Habib B'ishto Kishinida, that a person is permitted to look at his wife when she is an Nida, even though she is an Erev with him. We spoke about this in the past, whether Ishto Nida is really an Erev or not. That was also a question in the Rishonim. I mean, there's no question that she's a Surah, the question is whether she's the Mokam, whether that's considered to be Gilei Arayis or not. So the Rambam's view throughout Mishnah Torah is that Anida is considered to be a full-fledged Erva. And Rabbi Natam's opinion was no, Anida is not an Erva. It's an Isser, it's an Issachar, it's not an Erva. An Erva means a mother, a sister, a Shazish, etc. But a woman who's Anida is an Issachar, so not called an Erva. But that purpose doesn't make much of a difference. The Rambam writes that one is permitted to look at one's wife when she's Anida, even though he's enjoying looking at her. The Rambam says that since she's muteris, then soon a little wash is going to the mikvah, so there's nothing to be concerned with. Just the very etzem of looking at her is not a problem, and there's no concern. It's not even part of the hachokah, says the Rambam. It's at the gomer. However, what he should do, says the Rambam, is stamp the kalas rosh, it's chok, and again, whatever the details of those kinds of things are. So the Rambam is very makel about this. He sounds like it's mamash et gomer. There's no limitations whatsoever. So the Rambam says, if you look carefully at the Gemara in the Darim, because the Rambam is out of a love of basesa shalavach yisim in the Darim. So the Rambam makes reference to this Gemara maseches the Darim, the way he interpreted the Gemara, that there, although one is allowed to look at one's life, which is a need, at the places that are usually uncovered, but the places that are usually covered, so the rabbi says that is considered to be part of the harchakas, and that's how we pass the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. So we assume the chumra on this, that that one is not permitted to look at what's called mukamas and mechusa shiva when the woman is in erva, when the woman is in need. The question is, what exactly does mukamas and mechusa mean? So this is a big machlokes with the contemporary poskim. How precisely do we define this new category called mekamos ha-mechusos? So if you take a look at the 17th in the Rambam Kamos, so the Baal HaShulchan quotes the very top, the Rosh Kufi Talib, the mekamos ha-mechusim sheba, the Yesha Kosov, the those who wrote, the mekamos ha-mechusim ha-inu davka osam ha-mechamos, the gufa shedarka lechasosam, avka shi levada im bayla babayis. Says the Bani Ashuch in the first opinion that there are some who define Mekamos Mechusos as meaning those places, those parts of the woman's body that she usually keeps covered in the house. Let's say, for example, most women don't walk around with sleeveless in the house. So if she's going to, usually now she's wearing short sleeves or long sleeves, whatever it is, if she's going to walk around when she's in either with her total shoulders exposed, so that's considered to be a violation of the Kamas and Mechusas. Let's say most women don't walk around the house in shorts. If she can walk around in shorts when she's in either, that's considered to be a problem. But if there are parts of the body that the husband sees all the time, even though she shouldn't be walking that way outside, she shouldn't be walking that way when there are other men around, but lamais, the husband sees it all the time. So the Baal HaShulchan quotes the first opinion that says that that's not considered to be for these purposes mekamos ha-mechusos, and that would be okay. So let's say, for example, she wears short sleeves in the house. So normally she wouldn't go outside with short sleeves, but she walks around with short sleeves. So then according to the first opinion, she can walk around in the house with short sleeves even when she isn't either. Now the most important ramifications of this first opinion, says the Bari Ashulchan, the big enough kavina is covering one's hair. So strictly speaking, a woman doesn't have to cover here when she's in her own home, there's no other men around, just the husband around. So technically speaking, she doesn't have to cover here. The din of covering her hair is bashuk, when they're outside, other people around. So if you have a woman who usually does not cover her hair in the house, at least some of the time doesn't cover her hair in the house, even when she's in need, though, she need not cover her hair, according to this first view, even though that's objectively, quote-unquote, mekamos ha-mechusos. A married woman's hair is supposed to be covered, but alpha b'chei, since l'maisa, she doesn't cover in the house when she's okay, which is motivated to do it when she's not in need, so too, even when she's in need, that would be permissible as well. So that's the first view that that the Baal HaShulchan quotes. However, he quickly qualifies this view by saying, in the brackets, Amnam roi l'cholisha lino l'chasu saira apivesa afilu b'meita rosa. He says, this is all what the Ikara din is, but you wonder what l'chatchila is. L'chatchila, even when she's mudera, she should cover her hair when she's walking around the house. What she calls b'shnubura, sebenayinei, b'shem magan avram, k'vodah from magan avram. Actually has its roots in the Gemara, Maseches Yuma, a very famous Gemara. The Gemara tells about there was a certain woman, whose name was Kimchas. She was Zochar of 7 different sons over her lifetime who became Kohanim Gedolim. So they asked her, what schus did she have to have 7 sons of Kohanim Gedolim? So she said it was the schus that the walls of her house never saw her hair. And she never uncovered her hair, even in the house. So the post can point out, you see from the story that it's mutter, the Ikra did it's mutter. They were asking her what midas chasidah she did. But strictly speaking, it's okay. But it's considered to be a higher level of tznius. So therefore, So therefore, the Bar Yashulch writes, if you want to know what the woman's practice should be, Lamaisa, baby make tarasa, baby may do so, she should be covering her all the time. But the Ikra did, if it's mutter when she is tahora, if that's what her personal practice is, then she is permitted to keep her hair uncovered, we may need to do so as well. The source of this sheet, this kula, is Ramosha. Ramosha was the one who had this agdara. And according to Ramosha, basically, for most, many, many women, so this would be a very important kula. If you don't follow this view of Ramosha, and hold that a woman really, really has to keep Makom Sam Chusa Shaba in terms of the standards of what she wears outside, that's called Makom Sam Chusa Shaba, then she would have to cover her hair in the house, even when she's in Nida. She'd have to sleep with her hair covered also, otherwise the husband is going to sleep in the same room, he's going to see her. If he goes to sleep and wakes up, he's going to see her hair uncovered. That would be a violation of our caucus. So if you don't follow this Ramosha, we would insist on the woman covering her hair even when she's sleeping. Well, many people in America don't follow that. I think that many people in America follow this view of Ramosha. Though in Eretz Yisrael, people tend to be a little bit more machmir about this. I remember once somebody was... Once talking to my wife, someone who wasn't, they weren't like, you know, from such a Zah community, that's such, you know, necessarily the highest, highest, absolute chumritic standards of tznius. And they once, but they lived in Eretz Yisrael. And they were talking to my wife about this, and it came up on a casual conversation. And they were like shocked to hear that in America people sleep with their hair uncovered. Many women, when they need to sleep with their hair uncovered, they're like, in her community, which again wasn't Meir, they said it was like unheard of that women would sleep with them with their hair uncovered in Eretz Yisrael. Again, I don't know whether that's committed in the whole place in Eretz Yisrael. That's based on the fact those who didn't follow Ramosha's understanding. Then the Badi Shulchan writes, he says, look at the Biurim where he has kashas. Yeah, he raises the question whether everybody really agrees to Ramosha. I said, there are possible who disagree with Ramosha, but those who rely on Ramosha definitely have what to rely on. This idea that the Toskim write that lechatchila she should really cover hair in the house all the time, even when she's tahora she should cover. This is not the ikker din. This is a higher level of tzinius. Tosfos points out that the din of the Gemara it's okay because the Gemara uses the lashon isha lo telech rosh meshuk, but in the house itself is only b'toras mini b'toras chumra. So they quote from the Zohar, they quote from the Sivri HaKabbalah, who are very machmir in this. That's why there are many people who are very careful about this. They try to keep their hair covered all the time, even when she's tahora, literally when she's sleeping, but at least when she's walking around in the house. Remember when we, soon after we got married, so we went to a couple of days of vacation up to New England, and we went to one of these, it's called Sturbridge Village, one of these like restorations, the colonial villages that, you know, restored. I remember I was very fascinated because there was a whole display about how to dye wool. So I was very interested because I was interested about Malachas Tzaveas. I was asking them all about dyeing wool. Then they were showing us an umbrella from the 1700s. I was very fascinated because in Nei Yehuda there's a true Menucha Shabbos about opening and closing umbrellas. So he describes the umbrellas very different from the umbrellas that we have today. So I was very, very interested in the Menucha Shabbos dimensions of the exhibits. So in these places, so they have these people walking around dressed like they live in the 1700s in Massachusetts. So there was a woman there who was dressed with her hair covered and all. So my wife was like striking up a conversation with her. She was asking her about whether they cover the hair in the house also. I think it was a very touchy topic. We just got married, so she wanted to know what the minhag was in 1700s in New England, whether they were, whether they held like the taisos, like the one of Rome, like the Zohar. Just each person, what interests them is what they, you know, what they get out of trips. Then the Bar Yashulchan throws a curveball at us, and he says, it's 5 lines from the bottom of that first paragraph, says the Bar Yashulchan, don't forget that this has nothing to do with the regular din of saying psukim and saying davening and learning when the woman's hair is uncovered. That's a whole other ballgame. So that's a separate issue. That has nothing to do with being a nida. That's true even if she's muteris. That's a problem. That a married woman's hair is considered to be a erva for these purposes, even if it's one's own wife, when it's not supposed to say Dvarim Shem Kedusha, negative. So this is a big question in the poskim, just how much this plays out. This man is the famous kula of the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that sometimes the Aruch HaShulchan is misquoted in this one. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, even though it's not right that the women are not covering the hair, some people think that this was like started in America, the women didn't cover the hair. Communities in Europe 100 years ago that the women were not as careful as they should be about this area of halacha. So the Chashukin writes that even if you happen to live in a place where the women are not careful about this halacha, So he writes that in no shape or form is he condoning it. He writes about 10 times that he's not condoning it, because people should have mistaken. It just shows that even though you give a disclaimer 10 times, people still misquote him. He says, but it would appear to him that since Bisman HaZeh, there are so many women who are not covering their hair, so it doesn't have that degree of hear her to it anymore. A person sees a married woman's hair, doesn't think twice about it. So he says that the Isser of saying Kriya Shema, saying Drum Shekdusha, Egan Erva is basically an Isser of hear her. You're not allowed to be saying Kriya Shema in a place, saying Devar Torah, saying Parachas and Psukim in a place where your minds are going to stray into inappropriate thoughts. If the woman's basically dressed, she has her hair uncovered, in the olden days, that was like unheard of, a married woman would walk in the street with her hair uncovered, that's going to lead to the hero. But Zman HaZeh doesn't happen that way. So therefore, he thinks that the Isser of Kriya Shema, and Tefillah, and Kiddush, Birchas Hamazon, etc., wouldn't apply Bisman HaZeh. That's the cooler that the Yochanan Shulchan writes. Again, he was no shape or form was condoning the Isser of going outside with the hair uncovered. He was just saying that if and when it's happening already, so he thinks that the secondary Isser of Kriya Shema, etc., wouldn't apply Bisman HaZeh. So others disagree with that. Others say that it's not true. Much across the board, that's what the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah doesn't make mention of this. Mishnah Berurah was also aware of the fact. He mentioned that in the Sefer Mishnah Berurah that Nebuch, that there are some women who weren't covering the hair, and he also bemoans that that phenomenon. But he doesn't make any mention of the fact that therefore the din changes Bisman HaZeh to the Kriya Shema. What the Mishnah Berurah is willing to be making, Lani quotes from the Chayyadam, that if a person is not looking directly at the hair, if a person's eyes are closed, if a person is looking down, if they look to the side, so the Mishnah Berurah is willing to be making on that, that's not considered to be literally the erva at the time of saying Kriya Shema. That's a very helpful kula. Those who find themselves making kiddush and benching in places where the women's hair are not covered appropriately. Not everyone even agrees to that. There are some who say no. There are some who say that the only eitzah that would help is the mamish turn around. Even closing one's eyes wouldn't help. That's what some folks can say. I was once at one time Rabbi Avadia Yosef came to YU many years ago. There was a whole Sephardi family that had sponsored his coming. So we gave a whole series of shiurim. So one of the shiurim that he gave was in the YU Beis Medrash, and they brought all the family members in for the shiur. So there were men and women. Like the first row was reserved for the family. So there were. Women, I was a little way in the back. I didn't sponsor the trip, so I was sitting a little way in the back. So the man and the woman were sitting in the front row, and then Rav Adya was giving the shiur, and then all of a sudden, the middle of the shiur, all of a sudden, he said, he continues the shiur looking this way. Everybody thought maybe he's looking at the other part of the audience, and the shiurbach realized one of the women there, maybe more than one of the women there, didn't have the hair covered appropriately. And he didn't want to be Mekel just to close his eye. He could have said the same shit as I closed. Also, Rav Adya, I don't think worry about that. So the Mamash turned around. I don't think they knew what was going on, but the Bachel Yeshiva understood exactly what was happening. Okay. Anyway, but the Mishnah Berurah is a little bit more Mekel than that. The Shulchan is even more Mekel than that. So this Machlokes, this question about the Kobos HaMechusa Shel God, this is going to impact potentially on another shot. If you take a look at the eighth of the Ma'ar Mekamos. So the Pesach Tshuva quotes a Shaila, Tzarech Iyoni Mutal Lishma Kol Zemeh Shema, is a person permitted to hear, Kol Isha, permitted to hear his wife singing when she is in Nida. What's the Shaila? So the Pesach Tshuva relates it to a Gemara Masech HaShabbos. So the Gemara says, Me'achad the Gemara the Shabbos, that you Gimel Amar, Makish Isha Nida Le'eshes Re'ehu. The Gemara quotes a Pesach in Navi that has a Hekesh between, it compares someone who violates Nida and someone who violates Eshes Ish. So the Gemara says that Hekesh teaches a certain similarity, certain things that you're not allowed to do with an Eshezish, you're not allowed to do with Ishto Nida. The only thing is, Rakid Yichud Sharon. The only difference is that Yichud is permissible. Mishum da Torah Ida Suga Bashashanim. We learned about this previously, that one is allowed to be in the same room with one's wife when she's in Nida. The Gemara Sanhedrin says that if Kodesh Baruch Hu promises us, Paskin Shashim Suga Bashashanim, that literally hedge of roses. That's what the name of the book came from, Hedge of Roses, from that Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin. But the Gemara interprets the Pasuk Sheashirim to be Merameh, to alluding to the Suga Bashan, the fence, the Hedge of Roses, i.e. that a woman just tells her husband that she saw some red, and then he stays away from her. So the Gemara says that's enough of Hachok itself. The Torah itself is made that the couple are not going to be Chayte, and Yichud is Mutter. But with the exception of Yichud, it sounds like pretty much the dinim of what you're not allowed to do with the nation station, you're not allowed to do with your own wife when she's in Ida. So in Cain, so the Pesachuba concludes, Nira to Asar, Tabaishas Rea Wasi, you're not allowed to listen to another woman singing, that's the Gemara Brach, it's the Nisar of Kolisha, so Kol Isha Erba, it's the Fesh Gemara Brachas. So who would deny that just as you're not allowed to listen to a married woman, somebody else's wife sing, so too you're not allowed to listen to your own wife sing when she is in Ida as well. That's the Pesach of the Pesachuba, and then he writes, leaves it hanging, he's not 100% sure. So there are other people who disagree with this Pesach Tshuva. Rav Adya Yosef happens to be Mekelin. Meikle this one turned away before, but he's Meikle in the Shaila. He also, you're allowed to listen to your wife when she's singing. What's the issue? So Rav Avadya writes that this comparison to Ishtvan Nido, to Eishes Ish, is not 100%. Yichud is not the only exception to that rule. There are other exceptions to the rule as well. One of the exceptions is something that we just learned a little while ago. The din is you're allowed to look at your wife when she's a Nida. And maybe Mekomas and Mechusa Shabbat, you're not allowed to look at, whatever that means. But to look at her face, to look at her fingers, to look at her head, that you're allowed to look at. That you're not allowed to do to an Eishes Ish. Someone is not allowed to be in the stock of Eishes Ish, not allowed to stum gaze at another married woman. If in passing, you're talking, and it's very, you know, very, very quick, kind of, you know, that's a different story. But for a person to dam from mistakel to be nehenem riyasa, that's an isagomer. So comes Rav Avadya and says, you see clearly that the definition is not identical, the rules are not exactly the same. The Gemara meant in general, many of the limitations that you're not allowed to do to other women, you're not supposed to do to your wife when she's in either. But to say that there is an ironclad equation between the two is clearly not the case. So Rav Avadya thinks the Mikra then he thinks you're allowed to listen to your own wife when she is singing. So if you would have asked me, I would have said that this Shaila sounds like it should depend upon Rav Moshe. What exactly is meant by the halacha mekomos hamechusos? Kol b'isha erva, that means listening to a woman singing, is like looking at a makom erva. That's what Chazal dash in the pasuk from Shirshim Kolach Arev Marchnave, that the pasuk is b'shabech, the pasuk is praising the woman singing. So that teaches us that's considered to be an area of, that's like an area of a body that you shouldn't be looking at. So how do you define mekomos hamechusos? If you define mekomos hamechusos by objective halachic criteria, that whatever she can't do in public, so then the husband has to be careful not to look at. So according to the Machmirim, that the husband can't look at his wife's hair when she's in Nida, so it would make a lot of sense. He can't hear her voice when she's in Nida also. She can't not allowed to sing in public, so she can't sing in public, so she can't sing in private either. But if you look at Rav Moshe, the mekomos hamechusos doesn't really depend on hilchos tznius outside. It depends on lemaisa what her practice is. These things that the husband is familiar with. The husband sees her hair every night. The husband sees her top of her arms every night. So it doesn't get him excited. So the husband hears his wife sing. It doesn't get him thrilled. So if that's the case, so then according to the Mekilim, to look at the wife's hair, it should be mutter to hear her sing as well. So if you would have asked me, I would have said that those two shaylos are mamash dependent one upon the other. The only thing is that Rav Moshe disagrees with me. Rav Moshe was the biggest maker by the hair, and then he's the machmir by the singing. Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva that he thinks that you shouldn't listen to the woman singing. So you see, Rav Moshe obviously held that the lumbus is different, that hair is different than singing. So others disagreed. Others were making against Rav Moshe. Vajja is making on this one. Vajja, as we said before, Vajja says that he thinks that there's no issue whatsoever. The Ron Gedolia Polsky more making. Again, different opinions, different sheets about this, about listening to call Isha of one's wife. Even those who are machmir, maybe would be a little bit more mako when we have combined together with some other kulas in Chizkalisha. We know that there are a couple of other kulas that have flown around under certain difficult circumstances to permit certain types of things that would otherwise be Kalisha. There are two famous shaylos that were raised by the Gedolia Poskim last couple of generations. So possible mitigating factors concerning Kalisha. One was what's called Shirei Kodesh. So there was one opinion that maintained that the Isra of Kalisha is only when she's singing love songs. If she's singing, you know, secular kinds of music, if she's singing Yom Zemechubot or something, so then that wouldn't be a violation of Kalisha altogether. So we generally don't follow that. It really is that's Yoch, it doesn't appear in the Gemara, it doesn't appear in the Mishnah, it doesn't appear in Shulchan. There was one opinion, later Poskim, that suggested such an idea. So we try not to rely on that just outright. And there was another question in Poskim about whether Kalisha applies when you have tricholim, when you have two voices together. Gemara Rosh Hashanah says that I can't read the Gemara. Megillah Rosh Hashanah says I can't have two people laying together because tricholim lo mishtamek. You can't have two people making brachas together because otherwise you can't hear anything. So someone will argue that the same way that tricholim lo mishtamek appears in Uchas Brachas, in Uchas Tefillah, so too it appears in Uchas Kalisha. That's not called listening to one. Hearing a group of voices, that's not called focusing on one voice, that would be okay. Other poskim hold that that's not correct. Other poskim say that the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah that if you really, really want to pay attention, so you could pay attention. The Gemara says that you can't have two Balkaris for Kriyas HaTorah, but you can't have two Balkaris for Kriyas HaMegillah. Two people can lay Mamash at the same time, so they read the same words, otherwise it's hard to hear anything. If two guys get up and both lay Vayhi, Bimech, Shrosh together, that's okay. What's the difference? So the Gemara says that Kriyas HaTorah people don't pay so much attention to. So it's every week, it's every Monday, Thursday, you hear Kriyas HaTorah all the time. So psychologically, people don't pay so much attention to laying. But Kriyas HaMegillah, it's once a year, it's a special mitzvah. Once a year, everybody pays such careful attention. That's where you see that sometimes in shuls, people are, you know, sometimes when the Balkarian, the Megillah makes a mistake, everyone gets all to Balkarian, Kriyas HaTorah, even though the din is the opposite, that the din of all, we have to be more machmir in Kriyas HaTorah's mistakes than Kriyas HaMegillah's mistakes. But psychologically, people get more tzehits about Kriyas HaMegillah. So the Gemara says that Kriyas HaMegillah is such a midah d'chaviv, so you can even be yotzei the mitzvah with trei kol, because you'll focus in, you'll zero in on the voice that you want to hear. And something is chaviv to you, you'll be able to pay attention to it. Some folks can say, how do we turn around and be making a kalisha if there are multiple voices singing? The guy, he likes the one of the women has a better voice than the other woman, so he's going to be listening to that voice, not going to listen to the girl who doesn't sing well. So it's you opening up yourself to the possibility of outright violation of kalisha. So many folks can vote like that. Another saying we never heard, no shemana, no gemara, no rishon, no shacharach. Nobody ever heard such a thing until 100 years ago. There should be such a kula called trei kol mishtamik. So many folks didn't like neither the shirei kodesh kula nor the trei kol mishtamik kula. So the minig has become in certain communities, including the greater, our greater community, so to speak, to be a little bit more lenient about this in situations where we feel that it's important, where it's pressing. And this is a throwback to the famous tshuva of the Sri Deyesh. The Sri Deyesh was Rabbi Michiel Weinberg. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Berlin before the war. Then he survived the war and he ended up in Switzerland, became the yeshiva in Switzerland. He was a yeshiva and rav in Switzerland. He was a Yaki, he was from the old German Rabbanim. So in the Tshuva Sri Deyesh in the 1960s, he was asked the following question from a group of Jews in France. It was like a pre-NCS wide type of a thing. They were running youth groups and the kids were very, disenchanted with everything. And they felt that it would be good if they would have some singing and kumzitzi kinds of things. So they asked him, can they have the boys and the girls singing? The girls are going to be singing, the boys are going to be here. The singing, is that an outright violation of kalisha? So the Sri Deyesh gave his famous kula that he felt that under situations for the Tzorach of Kiruv, he felt that we could rely on these das yachets that we don't usually rely on. If it's a combination, it's trekola mishtamim, shirei kodesh, and a few factors combining together. So he felt that there was extenuating circumstances we have a right to be making. So that became the unwritten, I think, NCSY and other kinds of Kiruv policies over the years, that those communities that permit these kinds of things under those unique circumstances. So again, so you have a few of these kinds of kulas that start to combine together also. So even if the woman is, one's wife is a nida, and she wants to sing at the Shabbos table, so then there may be certain grounds to be mekel, even according to Brachmir, according to the Mekilim, who say that kalisha doesn't apply, b'chlal, when she's ishto nida, that would be all right. But even according to the machmirim, so then we could be a little bit more makel with shirei kodesh and other voices together. So I'm a little bit more makel if you recognize the voice all the time. So maybe that's a little bit of also a factor. That's what Rav Scheinberg has in the tshuva, where he writes that the minig in many communities was that the young girls would sing zmiras together at the Shabbos table with the brothers and sisters. They all sing together. Even though sometimes there were psukim in the zmirus and other things, they would sing halal together at the seder and other things they would sing together. So he says that since everybody knows each other's voices, they're all family members, so maybe you could be a little bit more makel in terms of some aspects of kalisha as well. So again, there are a couple of different factors that are combining together in terms of kalisha. Yeah, but the basic fundamental question, whether the woman can sing to the man, at the time when she's in either, there any use of kalisha whatsoever. So there are those, Rav Adya was Megal and Rav Moshe was Machmir. Even though we thought that the Shah should be talking to Bezer, the Maisa Rav Moshe didn't seem to present it that way. This din that a person has to be careful not to see the Mechamos Mechusa Shabbat, so this becomes a real issue in the second of the Mechamos on the page, on page 17. Little Os Kuf Tezvav, HaMechusa Shabbat. V'lachein kisha isha karas leleid also lebayel estaka v'yitzias havlad v'nimtzu v'estaka v'komas v'chus sheba v'yisha v'shaz leida hi bedin to masnida. Says about the Yeshulcha, one has to be careful when the woman is giving birth, the husband's in the room when she's giving birth, not to violate this din of look at v'komas v'chusa. By the time the baby is coming out, she is already a nida. When exactly she becomes a nida in the birth process, we spoke a lot about that in Shirum gone by, whether it's serious contractions makes her nida according to some, or even according to the Mekilim, or the water breaks, or the blood. A lot of different possibilities when she literally becomes a nida, but by the time she's pushing around, the baby's head is coming out, so then she's definitely a nida l'chol hadeyas. So the Badi Shulchan just says that he should be careful not to look at the Mekom of Tachul HaMechusim Shabbat. not to look mamish but also mokom literally, mamish at the point where the baby's coming out, I don't even need it for that. That's a general problem. The husband is not supposed to look literally also mokom mokom erva mamish, even when she's muteris to him, that's considered to be not a tenua thing to do. But to look at other parts of the upper leg area, those areas which are normally permissible to look at when she is in need, those are makamas of the chodeis, even according to Rav Moshe's lenient view, those are makamas of the shiva. So Rav Moshe was of the opinion there, Rav Moshe's a tshuva, when they asked him, is a husband allowed to be in the delivery room? So Rav Moshe writes, he's allowed to be there, he just has to be very, very careful. Obviously he can't touch at that point, he has to be careful to look away. He's careful. But Rav Moshe didn't ask him for being in the delivery room. There are some other poskim who didn't like the whole picture. They didn't like the husband being there at all. I think in today's world that the minhag is to be mekel. Years ago, used to be that image of the husband drops his wife off, you know, drops her off by the hospital, she goes in, he parks the car, comes out, he's walking around pacing in the waiting room, waiting for the baby to be told that the baby's born. So that image, I think, has gone out with the 1960s, if I'm not mistaken. I think the men are usually there. When I was my wife for the baby, I was there. Okay, but again, one has to be careful just to not to touch, obviously, and not even to look at whatever the definition of Makoma Samchusa Shiva is. The Lady Yehuda has a long tshuva. We're not going to read the whole tshuva together. Those who are interested, it's a. We spoke a little bit about the tshuva in a different context. In the ninth of the Makamos, the Lady Yehuda talks about a tshuva where the husband has to be the mikvah lady because there's nobody else around. You're living in a small place. There's no mikvah. Where does she go? She goes to the frozen lake. So she has to have him come with her. Otherwise, first of all, he has to come and break the ice, and he has to go make sure she doesn't fall in and not come out. The husband's clearly going to be there at the time when she's still a nida. So can he look at her when she's going down onto the water? So we spoke a little bit about this in the past in terms of him holding on to her. Can he even support her? Some will make it on that also. So the Yehuda raises the question, is that a violation of looking at Makamos and Mechusa Shiva? So basically the Yehuda was Meklin D'Shaila. Shasataki was Meklin D'Shaila, because he said the whole Chashash is a Hachacha, and the Hachacha is Gezeira, they're going to violate the Yisra of Nida together. How are they going to violate the Yisra of Nida? She's going to the Mikvah. She's going to the Mikvah 3 seconds from now. But the Meshugano, she's getting undressed to go under the frozen ice, so he's going to say, no, don't go to the Mikvah, we'll be Chotik first. Crazy. So obviously they came that far, she's going to the Mikvah. So the whole concern doesn't apply. So the Yehuda was mekel b'shas et chaf under those circumstances. And when mekel, Baruch Hashem, we usually don't have the frozen ice, but the case that this come up is, sometimes a woman has to go to the mikveh after hours. She just got off a flight, 2 o'clock in the morning, a plane was late, she wants to go to the mikveh that night. So very often the woman in charge of the mikveh is not going to wait up for 2 in the morning. She'll give you the code, tell her how to get into the mikveh, and she has to bring her own attendant with her. So she'll either bring a friend with her, or if she can't find a friend until the morning, she has to bring her husband with her. So the husband's going to have to look, because the lady's brave, you have to have somebody watch her, or she has no idea whether the hair is going down properly. So she can't go to the mikveh without anybody watching. So never, you have to rely on the fact that the husband is the quote-unquote mikveh attendant. One has to be very, very careful. Forget about who's watching the mikveh. If one is going to the mikveh after hours, one has to get very, very precise directions from the mikveh attendant exactly what to do and what not to do. Otherwise, sometimes the filters are very often on Shabbos clock, so when it closes, the filters start going on, so the mikveh attendant has to deactivate the filter. Don't think you're going to go in there and start turning off the whole mikveh. So you have to make sure, you can't just, you happen to know the code, so you remember last month you came on a late flight, so no problem, why bother with the mikveh late, I'll go in at 2 in the morning myself, so you can be in for trouble, because the filters may be on, the alarms may be on, a lot of things may be on. So don't get into that attitude, just, you know, spazier into the mikvah in the middle of the night for yourself. Make sure you know what you're doing. But in terms of if you know what you're doing, and you have somebody watching, so if you have a woman friend who's willing to come with you to the morning, that's great, that would be even better. But if it's not practical, so then you can rely on this tshuva, the Nevi Yehuda. So the Nevi Yehuda, in this middle of this tshuva, he has a whole discussion. How does he know this is true? What's the source for this idea that we don't have to be concerned they're going to be chotei if it's going to be just in a short amount of time? So he quotes a story from the Sarmi Kutsi. Sarmi Kutsi was one of the Balei Atosis. So, if you remind me next week, remember the Maisa Shai with the Samikutsi, that's the source of this. Next year, I'll try to tell over that story, then we'll move on to the next. Are we still around next week?